This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Roseau County Historical Society. In 1973, G. Arnold Grefthen published a collection of stories about life in the early days of the county. His book lists Janine Grefthen as co-author. I'll read from this book today. The book is called A Land of Howling Wolves, and I found a copy in the research area at the Roseau Museum. The large logging companies operating for several years in northern Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan furnished much wintertime employment for those willing and able to do this sort of rugged work. Many men from Roseau County and other areas would leave for these timber camps when the fall work was done and stay at their logging jobs through winter until spring breakup, when the logging camps would cease operations for that season. Most of these logging companies had large tracts of timber through which they built logging railroads to haul their logs, lumber, poles, railroad ties, mining timbers, pulpwood, etc. to market. Along these railroad logging lines, the companies built large bunkhouses and kitchens in which to house and feed their employees, and barns to house their many horses used in hauling the newly cut timber to likely loading spots along the railroad tracks. These places were called landings. When a landing would become so filled up that no more timber could be unloaded there, railroad flat cars would be spotted along these landings. Then jammers would be used to load the timber on the cars. These loading jammers operated on the principle of present-day drag lines. Some of these jammers were operated by teams of horses as a source of power. Others had built-in stationary steam engines as power. When a train of flat cars had been loaded, it would be hauled away by company steam locomotives and sent on their way to whatever destination the different kinds of timber were to be taken. Then the procedure was repeated until the landing was empty and the teamsters were again started on their work of filling the landing with raw timber products. There were a great many of these camps. There would be from 50 to 300 men working at each of these camps, belonging to the large companies. There were also smaller camps called jobbers camps. These jobbers would take contracts to cut off certain tracts of timber owned by the larger companies, which for some reason or other, the large companies didn't want to monkey with themselves. Some of these jobbers made very good money on their contracts, and as a rule, so did their employees. The larger camps also had large blacksmith shops. Besides office buildings, saw filing shacks, and a small store known as and called the Wanigan, where all sorts of lumberjack-type clothing could be purchased, besides tobaccos and other items of interest to timbermen. As a rule, lumberjack cooks served very good meals. A lumberjack wants good food and plenty of it. If he doesn't find it satisfactory in a particular camp, he will soon move on till he finds a camp where the food is to his liking. The timber companies knew this, so were always on the lookout for first-class cooks. And when they find a good one, they keep him. Otherwise, they would soon be out of timber workers to do their logging. 90% of the cooks and kitchen workers in the lumber camps were men, as the work is too hard and demanding for women, although on a few occasions I have eaten where women cooks, and very good ones at that, were employed. This, I found, was always in the smaller camps. Generally, the camps would cease their cutting operations in early March, as all cut timber remaining in the woods would have to be hauled into the railroad landings by large sleighs pulled by sturdy teams of horses. On the larger logging sleighs, hauling larger loads of logs, four-horse teams would be used. These four-horse teamsters were excellent horsemen and drew good wages. All this hauling had to be done before the snow was gone in the woods. The larger loads of logs, which were eventually sawed into lumber at the large company sawmills, always had four horses pulling them over ice roads. These ice roads were started in the early winter as soon as the weather became cold enough to freeze and stay frozen all day. In the construction of these ice roads, a large wooden water tank mounted on a sturdy sleigh was used. At the back end of this water tank, Several small holes had been drilled which could be opened or shut off at will by the teamster driving the sprinkler sleigh. These sprinkler sleighs always worked at night. The routes laid out to be iced for the heavy loads of logs to be hauled over them were gone over every night until an ice road of sufficient thickness had been established to carry the giant-sized loads. Once started, these loads were easily pulled by a four-horse team. There were some problems connected with these roads of ice, especially in hilly country. Going down a hill, the log load could by its own weight gain enough speed to run over the horses hitched to it. This danger was offset by men called road monkeys. Their job was to watch the sleighs as they went down a hill, and if it started going too fast, to break the speed by throwing hay under the sleigh runners, in sufficient quantity to slow the descent to a safe one. Not long ago, I saw a picture of one such sleigh load of logs. A four-horse team was hitched to this load. On top of the load are two men called top loaders whose job it was to arrange the logs in the proper position for best loading. As the jammer lifted the logs up higher and higher, alongside the load stands the timber scaler. On the ends of some of the logs, he had written 56 logs, scale 37,120 board feet. I'll read more from this story next week. Thanks to Wild 102 for this time to tell our county stories.